Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Indian Hotels Company Limited earnings conference call for Q2 FY23-24. On the call we have with us Mr. Puneet Chhatwal, Managing Director and CEO, IHCL, and Mr. Giridhar Sanjeevi, EVP and CFO, IHCL. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Puneet Chhatwal. Thank you, and over to you, Mr. Chhatwal.
Good evening, everyone, and thank you for joining our global conference call for Q2 23-24. We've outlined six key themes for the call today, and we'll walk you through each of these in succession. The first one is the India story. Let me begin with the Indian growth story, which continues to remain intact. India's per capita GDP is expected to more than double in the next 10 years, leading to a surge in disposable income, driving higher discretionary spends, which will directly benefit the travel and tourism sector. Moreover, we have recently heard through various sources in the government of the aspiration of 7 in 7, you know, 7 trillion economy in 7 years, which is a kind of a possibility that has been talked about by various, as I said, dignitaries and journalists, as well as consulting houses. I think the hospitality industry presents a significant potential for market penetration, with just 0.1 branded room inventory per 1,000 people as against a global average of 2.2. With the current surge in demand and a tepid growth in supply, the ongoing cycle is likely to continue in the near to mid-term. According to Hotelivate report, in the next 5 years, hotel demand is expected to grow at a CAGR of 8 to 10%, while the supply growth is projected to grow at just 5 to 6% annually. The nature of the supply under development is also predominantly in the non-luxury segment, with close to 3/4 of the supply coming up in Tier 2 and Tier 3 cities. The robust growth in demand is on the back of a structural shift in consumers' behavioral mindset. This, coupled with various other factors like government's push for infrastructure and short-term domestic triggers like the G20, like the ICC Cricket World Cup, and MICE, are further boosting domestic demand. The second theme is IHCL continues to deliver on quarter after quarter as a record, and this Q2 is our best ever Q2. And we are very pleased to share that our record performance in Q2 makes it the sixth consecutive quarter of best ever performance. Our consolidated revenue grew by 18% year-on-year to 1,481 crores, and our EBITDA grew 26% year-on-year to 402 crores, yielding EBITDA margin of 27.2%. Our bottom line grew by 37% to 167 crores, and we are happy to report that our consolidated PAT for the first half of this financial year stands at 389 crores, which surpassed the highest pre-COVID full-year PAT of 370 crores in 2006-07. On standalone basis, IHCL has delivered a growth of 23% in revenues to rupees 949 crores, with EBITDA of rupees 330 crores, up 39% from the last year. On standalone EBITDA margin, we reported 34.7% in Q2 23-24, which marks an expansion of 4.1 percentage points over last year. The third theme we have is asset management, which is driving the operating leverage. You know, we as management have focused very strongly on asset management initiatives, as 50% of our portfolio is considered asset heavy. This is a great opportunity by developing and by executing on comprehensive asset management. We have been able to focus on enhancing the performance of our existing hotels through strategic interventions and continuous upgrade of our product. Just as a reminder, our strategy that we have outlined both under Aspiration 2022 as well as Ahvaan 2025, with the ultimate objective of being the most iconic and most profitable hospitality company from South Asia, it is important for us to keep focused on asset management initiatives. Our big machines are firing on all cylinders, achieving strong growth over the previous year, and I'm very happy to report that Taj Mahal New Delhi, popularly known as Taj Man Singh, is back in our portfolio with a bang. It did miss full renovation completion for the first 6 weeks of this financial year, but it has been now performing very well on a daily basis. The next theme that I would come to, the fourth one, is our portfolio growth. Our growth momentum continued during the quarter. In the last quarter, we signed 6 new hotels and opened 3 new hotels. During the quarter, we signed 3 Taj hotels in international market, 1 as an operating lease in Frankfurt and 2 hotels in Bhutan. So far, in the current financial year till date, we have signed 18 new hotels and opened 9. Our new hotels opened last quarter include Taj The Trees in Vikhroli in Mumbai, Taj Guras Kutir in Gangtok, and Wow Crest IHCL Selections in Indore. We will maintain this pace and are well placed, as we have communicated and as we have guided in the past, to open at a minimum 20 hotels in this financial year. Our diverse brandscape enables us to be present in every geography, in every segment, and at every price point, creating new itineraries and offerings, thus giving us greater degrees of freedom and resilience in our portfolio. The next theme is the diversification of our top line. My colleague Giridhar Sanjeevi, our CFO, often talks about the importance of the diversification of top line. And with our new brands and businesses, as well as our asset-light growth, we have embarked on a journey of this diversification. As we enter the next phase of growth, we are reorganizing the 3 brands, or better said, we have already reorganized Ginger, Qmin, and Ama under a dedicated vertical of new businesses, which is being headed by Ms. Deepika Rao, Executive Vice President and Member of Executive Committee. Our new businesses vertical clocked in a GMV of rupees 240 crores in the first half of 23-24. Enterprise revenue of Ginger exceeded rupees 100 crores with a 24% growth over the previous year and continued reporting healthy EBITDA margins at 37% in Q2. With a proven and profitable business model, Ginger is very well geared to scale up at a fast pace. Our Qmin and Ama brands have established a strong customer connect and continue to scale up. The Qminization of Ginger that we started with the all-day dining is now scaled up quite well, and we have almost 40 Qmin-branded outlets which function as all-day dining. Taj Sands continues to be a great success story for us. Yesterday we signed a new concession agreement for a service and an outlet in Noida International Airport, which should start operations by end of next year. Taj Sands has recorded its best ever Q2 performance with revenues of 213 crores and an industry leading EBITDA margin of 24.4%. which comes on the back of 9 percentage point margin expansion over the last year. with almost 60% market share, TajSATS continues to lead the Indian airline catering segment. Also, we are looking at further scaling up TajSATS operations besides Noida in other locations, and we are very pleased that we started operations at the Mopa Airport in Goa, and that is beginning to stabilize also well. Finally, I have to say there are two issues that come as themes, that is investments. Investment in our brands, assets and capabilities, and investing in Paathya. In line with our objectives of long-term value creation for all stakeholders, we continue to invest in our brands, assets, and capabilities. We have recently launched the refurbished Chambers, the private membership club at Taj Lands End, and have yesterday opened the Chambers at Taj West End in Bengaluru. Our flagship Ginger Hotel near Mumbai Airport is nearing its completion. We have guided that we should have opened Ginger already a few weeks ago, but we remain very confident that in the next 2 to 3 weeks, this flagship and a trophy Ginger will be opening its doors. We have also reimagined and scaled up our food and beverage brands. We launched a new concept in Taj Mahal, Delhi, called the Captain's Cellar, which is one of its kind contemporary wine bar concept, or as they call it in the West, a wonderful and one of its kind vinothek. After receiving tremendous response in Delhi, we launched Loya in Taj West End in Bengaluru as well. Similarly, House of Ming, which opened its doors at St. James Court in London less than a quarter ago, is already trending as the number 6 restaurant in London as per TripAdvisor ranking. That takes me to investment in Paathya. Staying true to our ethos of doing business the responsible way, our ESG++ program Paathya has achieved significant milestones so far. IHCL now uses 37% energy from renewable sources and has installed 335 EV charging stations across 142 locations in India. Continuing our journey of eliminating single-use plastic, IHCL installed 27 bottling plants and achieved 47% recycling of water that is used. We are well on track to deliver our 2030 ESG targets. Finally, simplification, that is the buyout of minority shareholding in PM Hotels. Before concluding the call, we would like to update you that the board has approved, subject to shareholders and other regulatory approvals, the buyout of additional shareholding of approximately 7% in PM Hotels by way of a combination of share swap as well as cash. IHCL currently has a 51.6% stake in PM Hotels, which will increase to 58.6% post the proposed transaction. This will help us further simplify our holding structure. As always, we continue to stay focused on executing our Ahvaan 2025 strategy, and that focus has helped us win a lot of accolades also, which I've not mentioned in the speech, but they range from being rated as the TripAdvisor Best Hotel of the World, that's the Rambagh Palace, celebrating 50 years of Rambagh next month, as well as getting rated with Condé Nast, Umaid Bhawan Palace as the number one hotel, and further awards with Condé Nast and Travel and Leisure and Golden Peacock, as well as CNBC, ICICI, Lombard, that you can all have a look in our, as a part of our press release. Thank you so much for your attention. We now open the floor for questions.
Thank you very much. We will now begin with the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask questions may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking questions. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Binay from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Hi team, congratulations for a very strong quarter. Just two questions. Firstly, on the international side, we've seen the EBITDA down on a YOY basis. Any comments on that? How should we see that playing out? Secondly, on the domestic side, I believe this is the time that we start to renegotiate our corporate contract for the following year. Any read through about what kind of RevPAR growth are we sort of looking at as we are looking into 2024? So these two questions. Thanks.
Thank you, Vinay. I think let's take a step back and not look at just the corporate. I think the RevPAR growth numbers are in high double digits, driven still mainly by rates, which should help in the profitability on the domestic front. So I think we are very pleased to see that, and with all our renovation efforts that are going in, we are seeing a huge shift in, as I mentioned before, Taj Mansingh. As we speak, we have shut down Malabar. We just have opened in a soft opening phase Usha Kiran Palace in Gwalior. And whatever we renovate and comes back in its new avatar or new style, usually is showing at least a doubling of revenue. But the RevPAR growth remains very strong. And the business on the books is very strong. The first 26 days of October have been very strong, and we expect this trend to continue. The very important, what you touched upon, is international. On the international front, as you read yourself in here in the news, there are challenges in San Francisco, and it may take almost another 3 to 5 quarters for San Francisco to get back to where it used to be. Not as a hotel market, but with all the other things that have happened in that market from a macroeconomic perspective and a social perspective. And unfortunately, both UK with our presence in London, which is doing very well, but it could do much, much better than what it is doing. And also New York, which is not still back to the pre-COVID level, but the inflation has increased the costs. So there are certain challenges, but we as management looked at as our hidden upside potential going forward, because if they were to come back the way it used to be pre-COVID plus 10% to account for the inflation, and as well as if London was to come back, and with all the investments that we have made in our asset in London in terms of renovations, in terms of adding the spa, in terms of adding the Chambers, in terms of adding House of Ming, in terms of adding the all-day dining there and doing a lot of work in the inner courtyard, I think we look at it as an upside potential that we have. But yes, Cape Town is doing fine, Dubai is doing fine, Maldives is a bit soft, Sri Lanka is on the way up. So all in all, it's good. Lusaka is doing very well for us. So I think it's just really New York, San Francisco, and upside potential in London, which we are looking forward to, and that will hopefully change when we present Q3 and Q4 results in the next quarters.
Sir, thanks for that, Puneet. Just lastly, any comments on any inflationary pressures that you are seeing in the system crop up? I saw that your staff cost is up 18%, but still lagging revenue growth. But anything apart from that that you would call out could be sort of a headwind to watch from a margin trajectory next year?
Not really. I think we are, as I said, we are seeing very strong business momentum, and we are also seeing very strong not like-for-like growth for us. I think important is, as we have guided since our capital market day and in the previous quarters, that we are making investments in our future, be it through comprehensive asset management. So the more you invest, the more you displace. And when you displace and when things come back, it just takes time. And that is one, but it's taking care of not just the short term, you're taking care of the mid and the long term, a brandscape for the company, as well as our investment in new businesses. So as I mentioned, under Deepika Rao, we have created a new organization because when we went through a pandemic, people were double-hatting and doing Ama or Qmin or other things on the side. But now there is a dedicated, focused organization with its own marketing, with its own finance, with its own sales, with its own revenue management in these three new business verticals under the leadership of Deepika Rao. And of course, that is an investment in our future. And as we said, this quarter, we have guided a bit more on Ginger. As of next quarter, we'll do more on Qmin. The following quarter, we'll guide more on Ama, and we'll start reporting more comprehensively on also on the new businesses.
Just one other comment, Vinay, is that if you look at the segmental growth, the SMB revenue growth has been about 10% or so in this in the second quarter. We expect that to pick up in as we go along. So we don't see any stresses because of inflation, as you pointed out, Vinay. We don't see stresses at this point.
Yeah. And just on the occupancy, right? Like in the last call, you mentioned that Goa is now a 365-day destination. Again, in Q2, we see very good occupancy levels. And this question has come to you many times in the past also, that where can occupancy go to? Any comments on that?
I think number one is that you have seen that the standalone occupancy went up to 75% then actually. You've
yeah.
seen that data in the annexure actually. And I think, and if you combine it with the, so there are two, three factors which could aid in occupancy. Number one, I would say, is the whole supply-demand thing. And you saw the chart which showed that most of the supply is actually coming not in the key metros, but in the outside of the key metros actually. So that itself means that existing micro-markets in key metros should be well protected and should benefit from rising occupancy. Secondly, all the demand factors like, for instance, FTA, the foreign travel visitors, all that should help. So my own sense is that occupancy could still go up a little bit actually. However, I think as we've always been saying on the profitability, I think in the key metros, one thing we have always mentioned. In the key metros in anywhere in the world, whether it is Singapore or Hong Kong or anywhere else, the hotels generally tend to do an occupancy in excess of 75%. 75% is typically the seat. Like in Bombay, you see 85% occupancy. So occupancies tend to be very around 75% plus actually. And rest of it, what really happens is that asset management helps in terms of driving profitability actually. And asset management has really helped, for instance, in Taj Lands End. I mean, Taj Lands End in the recent past has been running at effectively 100%, 99 to 100% occupancy on several days negative in terms of, oversold dates actually. And that's fundamentally happened because the shape of the hotel currently is completely different from what it was about 18 months ago in terms of all the efforts taken in terms of renovation, whether it is the theater, the chambers, the business lounge, the gymnasium and all of that actually. So I think therefore there are levers available beyond just supply and demand in terms of driving occupancies actually.
Yeah, no, those are all good points, and we look forward to Ginger Santa Cruz. Thanks, team.
Yeah, thanks for that.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Achal Kumar from HSBC. Please go ahead.
Hi. Good evening, gentlemen. So I had a couple of questions, actually. So first of all, just want to understand on this mix wherein you said that a lot of capacity growth will be coming in non-luxury Tier 2, Tier 3 segment. Do you expect... since the capacity growth will be coming there, do you expect there's a potential risk of a pressure on the pricing in those tier 2, tier 3 cities, non-luxury segment? Or do you see the demand growth will actually chase the supply growth and hence you don't see any pressure? And that means effectively the overall average AR of the system should decline, because if the mix is trending towards non-luxury segment, then the ARR should decline. So how do you see that impact of the mix, and how do you see that in the growth?
Achal, on a lighter note, if I may answer, it seems as if you're always looking for reasons to reduce the rates, and we as hoteliers, we're always looking at reasons to increase the rates. If there is less supply coming into Mumbai or Delhi or Bangalore, and the demand remains strong and the occupancy increases, our ability to charge as a sector, forget Taj or which brand, whichever may we talk about, should be normally higher because the new supply is coming in tier two or tier three cities, right? So not like there are not 10 or 20 hotels coming into Mumbai. There are not 10 or 20 hotels coming into Delhi. So I think that is, and if you have large event halls like a Jio, like a Bharat Mandapam in Pragati Maidan, or like a Yashobhoomi in Dwarka in Delhi, even if you have one event which is going to host 2,000, 3,000, 5,000 people in a single hall, and half of them need accommodation, the city will be sold out.
Yeah.
So I think there is a structural change that is happening, and it may not bring in results tomorrow because some of these events need to be booked 9 months, 15 months, 18 months in advance. But today we have that infrastructure available, and these metros will benefit significantly. And if new supply additions have to come, they will take 3 to 5 years to get added. And by that time, the demand, in theory, I repeat, in theory, should grow faster in these cities than the supply would.
I don't know whether you picked up the other statistics that we have put up on slide 30, which Hotel Event says that 65% of the share of luxury pipeline is with Taj, actually.
Yeah, yeah. No, I saw that. Actually, I was coming to slide 13. I mean, you know, sorry, it was different slide, but slide 13. I mean, you know, you have shown, you presented about the ARRs, occupancy, and RevPAR in Q2 in different segments, Taj, SeleQtions, Vivanta, and Ginger. So while ARRs were up sharply, 8%, 11%, in Taj and SeleQtions, Vivanta, it was up only 1% in Ginger. So just, I mean, we just want to understand the reason of such a low growth in Ginger. Is it like, you know, was it underlying trend that the prices were not going up in Ginger? Or is it strategically sort of you were holding prices in Ginger so as to inflate the occupancy levels, because occupancy in Ginger significantly high. So is it a normalized trend? Is it a normal trend that pricing in Ginger may not go up sharply? Or, I mean, what's going on there? I mean, just want to understand the sort of background there, please, if you could help.
Yeah, thank you for pointing that out. It's an interesting one. See, Ginger, we have moved now, 70% of Ginger portfolio has got renovated and repositioned. And when a hotel is undergoing renovation or the inventory is not available, you don't see that change in the rate. But as we get into Q3, Q4, and Q1, in the next 9, 12 months, you'll see a significant increase in that rate. And we did that. We did also, as I told you, Qmin rebranding. And because of that, once the work's finished, they happen, you reopen the inventory, then you start seeing the impact. And actually, the growth in Ginger as a percentage going forward, we feel will be much higher than what you are seeing here. Here you are seeing 14% RevPAR growth. You could see that number easily cross 20 going forward. So because of the change in the business mix and the model, which does not happen over time, it has taken time, and still 30% of the portfolio needs to be done. So maybe it will not be 100, it will be 90 or 85% in the next few quarters, but that will start showing results.
Right. Right. Fair enough, Puneet. That's quite interesting. The other thing I wanted to understand about the demand trend. So basically, you know, I mean, we recently initiated on U.S. hotel industry, and we found that, you know, the impact, COVID impact is still there. The demand is still, there is a lot of leisure demand, as we call business plus leisure. So how do you see the trend in India? I mean, do you see the COVID-driven trend has completely gone, or you still see the demand, the leisure demand, the people taking multiple short trips, you know? So I just want to understand the mix. I mean, is it how you see? I mean, now in Q2, but going forward, how do you see the demand trend, please?
Yeah. See, when you have events, whether it's a black swan or another major event like a COVID, there are certain things that change forever. And I've given this example in the few quarters before also. If from 1.4 billion people in India, only 5% is relevant for our sector, then you are talking about, you know, 70 million people, right? And from that 70 million, if only 10%, that means 7 million have changed their behavior pattern forever. That means they are now doing what you are calling leisure, combining business and leisure and spending 5 extra nights in hotels in a year. Then you have 35 million room nights, which was not there before, from the same people in a year. So that's the kind of change that is not just relevant for India. If you look at the hospitality sector in general across the globe, the recovery has been led by domestic. And these partial reasons could be, you know, risk of travel, visas, whatever else was there. But there is another reason, or in India, dekho apna desh, the other reason is that these are incremental room nights which were not happening before, where people were not comfortable driving themselves. They always needed somebody to drive them. Now they get into the car and drive. And the numbers that I've taken is, you know, like very, very small base. This base in reality could be much higher.
Right. Interesting. Fair enough. My last question is around your strategy towards international. I think you recently invested in Netherlands. You recently invested something in Germany. So, I mean, are you strategically looking at the international markets, or you remain opportunistic wherever you see the growth and potential? You just invest there. And what kind of impact, I mean, international market, of course, you've been facing difficulties in U.S., U.K. is doing pretty well. So overall, how do you expect, don't you think the investment in the international market could actually be a bit of a challenge initially, maybe until you really settle down there?
I fully agree with you. I don't disagree with you, but we have not invested in international market. You know, we announced a hotel in Frankfurt. If the investment comes from someone else, we're just signing an operating lease, which means we are just going to pay a rent. We're spending some money on the Taj brand, like chambers, etc., but it pays itself faster than we think. So our investments will be very much India-centric. We are not having any strategic intent to invest in international markets on our own money, but we are very open to signing management contracts. We signed management contract in Riyadh for our 250th hotel. In Diriya Gate, we signed recently two contracts in Bhutan on management contract. Before that, we signed two management contracts in Dhaka, because in the Indian subcontinent, even Dhaka is very important to us for both a Taj and a Vivanta. But international, we will be very selective, and we are very focused with Taj brand. We will keep doing one or maximum two hotels per annum, but preferably on a management contract basis, and if it's the Western Hemisphere, using other people's institutional capital on an operating lease basis, where we might end up just paying for the investments in the brand or in the upgrade, which is a very nominal and a small amount. We end up doing that even in India. Our investments in the short and medium term if we do very selectively, will be in our own home turf and not outside.
Perfect. Thank you so much, and wish you.
See, Achal, everyone is looking to invest in India. It would be foolish of us to go and invest outside.
You're right.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Lavanya from UBS. Please go ahead.
Hi. Am I audible?
Hey, Shalin.
Yeah, Shalin Desai, sorry. Am I audible?
We heard another name, just Lavanya.
Lavanya, hi. Both cover Indian Hotels at UBS.
I know Shalin, was just.
Right. So guys, two questions, right? In our weakest quarter, you guys have achieved 75% occupancy, right? And so, I think our full year occupancy will be definitely higher than 75. Now, at what juncture do you start thinking about changing your business strategy?
Sorry, you are breaking up, Shalin. Hello? We can't hear you, Shalin.
We seem to have lost the line for Shalin. We move to the next question. The next question is from the line of Prateek Kumar from Jefferies. Please go ahead.
Yeah, I'm really sorry for that. First question is on dependence on events that are likely to be on the side that reducing dependence on events.
Prateek, your voice is breaking.
Yeah.
If you're on a hands-free, request you to use the handset. Prateek? We seem to have lost the line for Prateek as well. We move to the next question. The next question is from the line of Nihal Mahesh Jham from Nuvama. Please go ahead.
Yes, thank you so much. Good evening, Mr. Chhatwal and Mr. Giri. My first question was that you keep giving this data of the premium that our properties have been able to achieve over and above the industry, which has only increased versus pre-COVID. If I were to ask you, say, within a specific city, what are the factors that is making is giving us the better pricing? Hello?
Yeah. Well, Nihal, there are various factors. It depends from city to city. But generally speaking, one could say your ability to charge is higher if the city is going through a very high occupancy and it's sold out. And you know that for several years, Taj especially, which is the backbone of our company, still with other businesses being relatively either in the infancy or a growth phase, Taj commands a premium because it is India's strongest brand across all sectors, and it has been rated for 3 years now among the world's strongest hotel brands. So if the occupancy levels are high and healthy, your ability to charge is higher, and we are seeing that across our portfolio in a very, very strong way. As Giri just now mentioned, it's not just a hotel or demand coming because the occupancy is high. It's your ability to charge because of the new spa in Lands End. It's your ability to charge because we've opened a theater in a non-revenue generating space, which can do previews, but people can also book it to watch cricket matches. We have completely redone the Chambers out there. We have done a new lounge for our club floor there. So all these things put together help you to charge, but of course, they also cost money, and they also cost displacement, as I mentioned before. But our investments in our iconic assets and our asset management initiatives are definitely showing a very big jump for us in absolute amounts. If you go and look at the historic performance of Indian Hotels, let's say for last 10, 15 years on Q1 and Q2, you will see that the difference is like massive in terms of performance. And that is because of all these investments that are happening. It's not just you're able to charge a premium. You're able to charge a premium for a variety of reasons.
Got that. Second question was, Mr. Giri alluded to it. Any specific reason this quarter there was a divergence between how room and F&B worked, and would that normalize in the coming quarters?
I think it should, because F&B, you know, the wedding dates are all in this quarter. So I think that is one of the reasons why the F&B was a bit more muted actually. And in general, I think on a longer term basis, I think there is significantly more opportunity in F&B. So you will see some of our efforts in F&B kind of paying off as we go forward.
Final question was on, we see that we've obviously increasing our stake in one of the subsidiaries that we have. Considering JVs and associates that we currently own, is there a long-term plan to maybe increase the stake or make it a full subsidiary like we did with Ginger in the future?
Obviously, those plans, I mean, the intentions are there, Nihal, as we have always said. I think these things are not easy to come by. So we use every opportunity which comes, whether small or big, to consolidate. Like in this case, we had an opportunity to take out 7% because those people wanted an exit. So anybody wanting an exit, we will definitely use the opportunity to do. I mean, this is something that we are always on the ball in terms of trying. So let's see where we get.
And our cash reserve that we have built up, we are today having already at the end of the quarter, 1,400 crore approximately cash, which keeps increasing every month. So we don't always have to just do share swap. We can also buy. We can have inorganic growth. We can have simplification. We can have consolidation. We have all possible opportunities now available to us because we have no debt and we also have cash reserves.
Understood. Thank you so much and season greetings to you all. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Prateek Kumar from Jefferies. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hello. Yeah. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Yeah, so my question was on, you have mentioned in your presentation about the events, impact of events is lesser now because we have record of, the overall impact within the rest is only 0.5% to 1% because of G20 or World Cup on a year-on-year basis. We get a lot of questions that what after FY24 into FY25 in terms of events. So overall, because the impact is only very minuscule as it started to appear, so it's the business as usual, like for FY25 or for the hotel industry, right?
We agree with you, Prateek.
Absolutely.
We not only agree with you, we strongly endorse that the hotel sector is very well positioned and all these things that you're hearing as a one-off now will become almost like a habit going forward. So it doesn't matter. You know, it will be a game whether it's a Hockey World Cup or it's a Cricket World Cup or it's us bidding for Olympics or, you know, these things will just keep happening. You become the fifth largest economy, you have the ambition or aspiration to become third. So all other things, including cost, including revenues, including events, all come with it. It will not be just GDP comes. It will be a combined impact of all these things happening.
And do you think it generally does improve the cyclicality of the sector, or will it still remain like a deeply cyclical sector when the downturn comes? Maybe which is still like many years away, but is it something which like sort of reduces the cyclicality?
The cyclicality in the sector will always remain, and we have to differentiate here on the domestic versus the international front. In the domestic front, because there is still so much to be done, and India is expected to grow at a certain rate on GDP, the cyclicality impact should be lower than what we have witnessed in the past, or alternatively, the length of the cycle will start changing. Also, you know, the way we have articulated our strategy, it's that we have had new businesses as well as not like-for-like growth based on asset-light model. That should help us as Indian Hotels to mitigate to a great extent cyclicality going forward. So I think today When we were last time hit, we were at 17% EBITDA and we gave a guidance of 25% EBITDA margin. Today we are giving a guidance of 33%, and if you are hit at 33% and your EBITDA margin drops by half, you are at what we would have been in 17-18. That's the change in the business model and the change in our portfolio mix and the change in addressing all the customer touch points with different brands. Does that answer, or are you looking for something else?
No, maybe so. My next question is on international markets. So, while you are looking at like management contracts or these models in international markets, while some of the markets impacted by global macro or other reasons, so does the downside in international markets impact such take rates in these markets? Because now incrementally, we are only looking at management contracts, so the take rates also are like sort of lower in these markets because of problems there.
Not really, Pratik. It's not our strategy to own single assets in international markets. It's not a part of our strategy. If we were to take a sliver equity or do key money or spend some money in renovation to secure a long-term contract, we are happy to do that. That's like a very small amounts that we talk about. But in fact, hotel investments are anti-cyclical. So if the markets are down, the kind of prices you get today, you would not get otherwise. But we would use our partners in India and outside of India to help us do that growth. Then us investing into assets. That kind of capital we don't want to block.
Okay, so I was asking regarding the take rates, which would be very similar what we are like have in India at 5-7%. So even in a down market, we should have a similar take rate.
The management fees are generally quite healthy. In fact, if you see the management fees that we earn from Dubai and all that, very good actually, and these are long-term contracts, and so I think we don't compromise on take rates for the sake of getting a contract. It's not possible actually. It's not possible. You can't do that.
Sure. My last question is on RevPAR growth. So obviously, first half has been like very strong in terms of year-on-year performance. So second half we are getting, I think, steep pace because last year second half was major records which we had. So likely this double digit should continue, right? As you say, like RevPAR growth being strong through the year.
Yeah, I think so. In fact, you've seen the chart that we have presented on slide 54, which shows how the RevPAR growth is about 15% in second quarter. Normally we do see that 30% jump between Q2 to Q3, and we have business is very strong at this point of time. So I don't see a problem in the overall double digit part for the current year. No, not at all.
These are my questions. Thank you.
Thanks, Pradeep. Thanks.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Lavanya from UBS. Please go ahead.
Yeah, I think it's Shaleen again. Right. Last time I got dropped off. So, Puneet Giri, I was asking, you know, that you guys have reached 75% occupancy levels and in a weak quarter, and most likely we'll end the year with higher than this occupancy. So at what occupancy level do you think that you will start thinking about changing your customer mix, and probably we will see, you know, more of ARR growth? So right now also it's going good, but, you know, the idea here is that the question we get is that, you know, how much ARR can improve from here. So, you know, where the mix is right now and where the mix can go of our customer. So any thought on near to medium term?
See, it's a double-digit growth. If you look at standalone, the ARR is increased by 18% and on the enterprise also by 11%. That's very healthy. Mm-hmm. And RevPAR increases of like 28% on standalone and 16% on, you know, enterprise level at domestic market, right? So I we have just discussed this before this call on a very different issue, and we are not seeing any change. We are seeing this trend continuing on the domestic front. There is some challenges on the international front, but on the domestic front, you know, Mumbai is very strong, Delhi is very strong, Goa is very strong. So all your top 10 markets in India are extremely strong. And the what we tend to forget, Shaleen, is we have been very successfully able to mitigate the impact of Nipah virus or all the landslides and flooding in Uttarakhand as well as in you know, Gangtok, etc. So there has been a lot of disruption that happened. But you don't see that when you look at the consolidated picture, which shows that some of your markets are extremely strong in terms of occupancy. And if your occupancy increases, your ability to charge increases. Your more sold out dates, then you had a very high occupancy dates, and that's when you start charging more and more. And we don't think about customer mix or change at a certain level of occupancy. We think about that, and our revenue managers have to think about that at least 5 to 6 times a day, yeah, if not every 2 hours. This is just a part and parcel of the business.
And if I just build on that, Shaleen, I think if you look at slide 68 in our presentation, Shaleen.
Right, sorry.
Slide 68 of our presentation makes us 59%. And that number has actually been going up. It was not 59 pre-pandemic, it was about 52 or so. So the transient mix will keep going up, also driven by the fact that it is not ADS and GDS. It's also about how we are investing in the brand and loyalty and all that. All that is transient. So a transient proportion will keep going up. That's number one. Number two, corporate is 12%, and that's deliberately so. We have discouraged a number of small corporates from getting into long-term contracts, and we've actually asked them to book on the web, actually, which means that we are treating them like a transient. And third, as you know, we have spoken about it, where we have changed the corporate contract from a fixed rate to partially going to a rate which is linked to that day's ARR, actually, which means it is 25% of bar and things like that. So, you know, those kind of steps we anyway continue to take. And beyond it, of course, as Puneet said, the revenue management kicks in. You know, you do need the mice because they not only give you F&B, but also rooms. So all of those we do. You know, you do need the crew because they give you base occupancy. And I think, transient will continue to be a very important part of what drives the rates up, actually. What drives the rates up. And that will continue to be a very important mix element in our business, actually.
Right. No, so exactly. So I think that's what I was looking for, that besides the increase, room increase, you have a lever in terms of changing your customer mix that will inherently change your or increase your ARR. Right. So that's what you guys are already.
And we have been doing it, Shalit.
Yeah, you've been doing it.
Right.
Okay. So second question, So when I look at your P&L right now, I think you guys can generate 1,200 to 1,400 crores of cash flow pre-CAPEX, after maintenance CAPEX, and that probably can grow at 15% CAGR for next, let's say, 4 or 5 years. So that would give you something like 8,000 crore kind of a cash over next 5-year time period. And if I, let's say, take a 2.5 crore per room, kind of a number, right? So you guys can add anything around 3,000 to 3,500 rooms in a luxury segment. And you can correct my calculation in terms of my capex per room if it's low. But so on the current domestic owned room, which effectively means you can increase your capacity by 60-odd%. My challenge is, how are you going to do that, right? Are you thinking about some inorganic actively or start looking for the land parcel? Because gestation period itself would be like 3-4 years.
I think you're right, Charlie, that there is definitely cash generation, and the utilization of the cash and capital allocation is clearly a very important thing. If you look at what we are currently doing, we are definitely doing greenfield projects, whether it is Lakshadweep or Gujarat and other places. And some of these places, we are not buying land. It's all lease, actually. So which means we are not really buying land. That's number one. So greenfields will continue to be an important part of how we will expand organically through adding capacity. That's number one. As far as inorganic is concerned, we continue to look at opportunities, Shalin. I think as we have always pointed out, I think the NCLT has been a very difficult way in terms of hotel properties so far, actually. So we'll have to do some bilateral transactions, and we continue to look at. We've got a very good business development team which kind of looks at all of this. And I think that ultimately what is important is not just the opportunity, but also to make sure that we pay the right price as well, actually. So organic growth through greenfields, whether it is using extra FSI available in land rent to sort of build, all of those we will do, Shalin, actually. I think, and you're absolutely right that these are, you know, these take 3-4 years to come. It's not as if that it comes overnight. Inorganic is important to be able to, like we talk of conversions in management contracts, like Cidade de Goa coming on stream one fine day. I think inorganic will actually give us immediate capacity, but we are on the lookout, and we'll continue to sort of look at those opportunities, provided the value, you know, these are value accretive, actually.
Got it, Giri. Got it. That's it from my side, guys. Best of luck and good show. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Rajiv Bharati from DAM Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, Rajiv.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity, sir. So, my question is on slide number 69. So you have seen the crew business growing by 50%. So is it, and earlier this, the contribution used to be close to 3%, pre-COVID, if I'm not wrong, and now it's close to 2% now. So my question is, in terms of sensitivity of the rates which you are rising, increasing on each segment, which is the, let's say, bottom three segments in terms of most sensitive, if you take the rates little higher, probably we'll be seeing a dropout.
No, no, I think the crew will always be a segment which will be there in a different number of hotels, actually, because revenue management is about base occupancy, which can come from crew, it can come from low-rated corporates and things like that. And then the rest of it, the revenue manager will push up rates, actually. So these are all elements of a business. You can't charge, what do you say, the highest rate for every segment, and every segment has a role to play, actually. So hence, I think, so things like crew will certainly continue to play a certain role in every hotel.
My question is on that, on the slide, you have shown a 50% tab, right? Which the contribution there.
But that 50%, you know, that don't look at that 50%. The crew share of revenue is 2%, yeah? So there's nothing.
My question is on the sensitivity of the segment in terms of, let's say, increasing rates, and they will shift to probably a lower category hotel.
No, but you know, I think the crew business, since these businesses come at a certain rate for sure, actually, and they are low rates for sure. And sensitivity of the crew rate, I don't know, because these are all contracts that you enter into with an Air India or a Vistara and all of those, actually. And these are fairly long-term contracts, and there are standard ways in which people operate. There are no sensitivity saying that if I increase the rate, crew will go away. If you don't want crew in a hotel, we do that also. There are some hotels where we say, "You know what? We don't want crew," and we will shift them to another hotel in the same city, because the good news is that we have multiple hotels in the same city. I think that's a call that we can take, you know. So I think, but I don't think we worry about sensitivity of rates to crew business in that sense. We don't think like that, Bharat.
Sure. And on slide 22, you have shown the operating leverage in some of your key hotels. But when we go to, let's say, slide 61 to 63, where you're given subsidiary-wise performance, and particularly for PM, Roots and Oriental, we don't see the similar operating leverage play out in terms of the swing in EBITDA versus the swing in the top line.
See, obviously, go to slide, first slide, which slide you want?
Let me explain that. There are a few hotels in PM which have been under renovation. I explained that in earlier points about displacement. So Nashik is undergoing extensive refurbishment so that it can get upgraded to Taj. And Taj View in Agra has just finished some refurbishment and has come back into operation, and you will start seeing that impact of operating leverage. As see, two hotels out of a total of 6 or 7, they create a big impact, but it's going to be positive. But maybe by the time they come back, we take also Blue Diamond in Pune, which is a part of that portfolio also under renovation. So there is some work to be done. We'll, as I said, we'll keep investing in our assets, and we are very happy with the way Taj View Agra has turned out in PN, and we are really looking forward to completing the renovation on Nasik and starting the one with Blue Diamond.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Those are my questions. And all the best.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Jaiveer Shekhawat from Ambit Capital. Please go ahead.
Sure, thanks a lot, and good evening, gentlemen. So my first question is relating to Taj SATS. Now, given that it has been growing at a very fast clip, and you also have plans of increasing operations to other locations as well, from an annual revenue run rate of roughly about 800-900 crores, where do you see that over the next 3 years?
Yeah, we think that this 800-900 could easily grow by another 30% to 40%, mainly dependent not just on airline traffic, is the non-aviation business, which we are considering in the new kitchen, especially outside of the airport zone for you know, cost efficiency reasons. And we do believe that Taj SATS is very well positioned to go beyond 1,000 in the next financial year and far beyond 1,000 in the following year.
There are a number of drivers here. So I think number one, as we talked about, the increase in the number of airports, and obviously these create opportunities in terms of expanding the business. Secondly, what's also happening is that airlines used to earlier, if there's a Bombay airport route as an example, airlines used to cater from different caterers, one in Jaipur and one in Bombay. Now you see on many of those routes, there is catering from only one city, which means there is reverse catering, which means if there is a Bombay-Jaipur flight, the same the food for the Jaipur-Bombay leg also goes from Bombay. So those are also happening, and smaller vendors in some of these destinations are also not being used by airlines. That's the second one. The third is the non-aviation, as Puneet pointed out. Fourth is the whole synergies with Air India and Vistara and all which should come in terms of developing. I think there are a number of different levers that are there which can help to grow both the top line and the bottom line in this business actually.
And sir, what would be the current share of non-aviation business in the overall SATS revenue?
Not very significant.
It's less than 10% at the moment, but our aspiration is to grow it to more than 20 over the next 3 to 5 years.
Understood. And similarly, in relation to your management fee guidance as well, now given that again growth has been pretty remarkable on that side as well, where would your guidance stand as against what you had guided for about 550 crores by FY26 under Aavahan?
I think we will come back on the capital market day next
year. Yeah, capital market day will guide you more on management fees, but we have 80 contracts in pipeline. If you take out 5 or 6 that are owned, and maybe another 5 that might be leased, the rest is all management. So the management fee income will keep growing.
Yeah.
And sir, lastly, on your JJ property as well, one, in terms of your renovation, what kind of a benefit are you expecting once you are done with the renovation? And will we still see some benefit during the second half? And also on your Santa Cruz property, and what is going to be your pricing strategy there?
Which property are you saying in Delhi?
No, Ginger Santa Cruz, I mean.
Ginger Santa Cruz,
you know, it's a trophy asset for that Ginger brand. We do believe that in 3 years of operation, it should reach 100 crores in revenue. Because that's what the market is for that 371 rooms, and it's a very fairly large property. If you're Mumbai based and you drive by, then one sees the impact it has. We are waiting for some licenses and some cleaning up of the facade and access road, As and when that happens, whether it takes 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, but we will be, the opening is imminent. It will definitely open in very much foreseeable future, I would say. Foreseeable future is limited to weeks and not to months.
Sure, so that's very helpful. Any comment on the renovation side of it? What kind of a benefit should we expect in the second half? And then overall, what kind of benefit should we expect after renovation in terms of rates that you charge on your Ginger portfolio? Any indication there?
Oh, Ginger as a portfolio for renovation. Yeah, the Ginger, the what we are seeing on the Lean Lux, as we call it, the Lean Lux hotels in almost all cities get north of 3,000, and in Mumbai and all, they even get much higher rate. So Ginger Santa Cruz should operate north of 6,500, 7,000 rupees stabilized rate. So it depends on the city, it depends on the size of the property, but we are no longer into that category the way this brand was launched at, you know, like 999 rupees or a cheap kind of hotel. This is a functional hotel that provides all possible services except for a, you know, swimming pool and those kind of additions. But you'll have an all-day dining restaurant. The F&B, when we started the Ginger brand, was outsourced. So actually just the name is old. Everything else is just new about Ginger. We have insourced the food and beverage. We have added meeting rooms. And just be patient with us for a few weeks. We would like to invite you for the opening of Ginger in Santa Cruz. All of you.
Sure. Wish you all the best. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Anuj Upadhyay from Investec. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity and good evening, everyone. So two questions. One is on the your initial remark where you mentioned that, you know, the U.S. hotel business have been underperforming, likely to, you know, expected to remain stable or turn out to be a better performer after 5-6 quarters. From here on. So exactly what gives us this confidence of this turnaround kind of a thing? Is this anything happening or going to happen at a macro level in the US, or there's some change in strategy from our end that would lead to stabilization of the
business? You know, there is a very good performance we had in San Francisco pre-COVID. We had turned it profitable. It's a zero debt. We own the asset. It's a relatively small-sized property in the middle of town, Union Square, which is a great location, but the market changed. So I don't think there is any issues in San Francisco in the mid and long term. It's a short term that city is suffering for a variety of reasons, which have nothing to do just with hospitality. It's a whole macroeconomic thing, as I said. New York is New York. New York, London, Paris, these are the top lodging markets of the world. And we do see that there is a change and a shift that will come there. And that keeps happening, these kind of markets, with one event in New York of a G20 kind. You know, you have UNGLA, you know, the United Nations General Assembly in the month of September, and the whole revenue base changes there. So all we need is a few more events like that, which will come, which will happen, and that will drive the change that New York is seeing. Also, the dollar has become very expensive. So travel to New York is not booming as much as it used to boom when the dollar was weaker. So all these things play out, but I don't think anything is permanent forever. So I'm not here to predict currency rates, but definitely certain things have a short-term impact. And it's very important for our brand to be in New York and London, and that is what differentiates us. That's what gives us the strength of playing on the same pitch as many other equivalent or important international brands in this segment play on the global arena. You have to be in the top lodging markets of the world.
Got it, sir. And second, on the capital allocation, I know so you have already answered this, but what you have mentioned is that we have multiple options as of now for the allocation, like enhancing stake across few JVs or subsidiaries, inorganic growth, renovations, so looking for assets which are under NCLT. Bearing this, do we have any other concrete plan, or we have covered almost everything on today? Or is there any change in the strategy to have 55-45 manage and own property? Are we going back to having, you know, more of an owned or managed property? I mean, just curious to know where exactly do we plan to, you know, allocate this 1400 kinds of a liquid fund that we have as well.
See, we are we have given that guidance under Ahvaan 2025. There is no change. Only thing is, as and when we achieve the targets, the owned might marginally decrease because of the growth in the managed portfolio. But because we are iconic and we have some of these great assets, we can't just either sell them or get out of them. Actually, they do provide us, as we said, the absolute amount of profitability is coming from these iconic assets. Giri just now mentioned with Land's End, the way it has been performing, Taj Mahal Palace in South Mumbai, or now the way Taj Mansingh or Taj Palace is doing in Delhi. So we are very pleased with that. We'll keep these kind of assets. Today it represents on a total portfolio, including hotels under development, around 50-50, but in operation, still the asset heavy side of the portfolio is higher, but with more and more openings of rooms and hotels under management contracts, we hope to have a balanced portfolio within the next 12 to 15 months in operation. We have it in when we include the pipeline. And going forward, maybe the owned part of the portfolio will become, let's say, 45, and the managed will become 55. Because with the Ginger, we want to be more in operating leases, which is also considered as owned. But technically, a leased hotel is also an owned hotel. So I think very carefully we will manage this mix. And the mix that gives us the best of absolute return, but also helps us to be a margin-enhancing company.
Okay. And lastly, any update on the sale of property?
Yes, we have submitted the plans and we are waiting to hear. So as and when we know, we will update, and if needed, we'll have a separate call. But yes, we have submitted plans online now for the development.
Fine, sir. That's it. Thanks for the opportunity.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Pavas Petia from Birla Mutual Fund. Please go ahead.
Hi, Mr. Chhatwal. I have two questions. One is regarding this branded supply. If I look at your slide 7, you are saying that 5-6% CAGR growth. But if I look at your growth plans, your also peers, everybody is talking about double-digit management contract growth. So how is this fresh supply coming for you guys when the physical asset creation is limited?
You know, we have given that guidance. We remain quite bullish that as of this month or next month, you can say we'll be opening 1.8 hotels a month. We have 80 hotels in pipeline. If we even stopped signing any new contracts today, we would be opening 20 hotels every 12 months for the next 36 months, which means 60 hotels to open. So I think on that side, our pipeline is very strong and very healthy. And we expect to keep growing.
Yeah, I understand your supply graph. I've seen that you're almost doubling your management contract. But my question is, the fresh supply is not coming. How you are kind of ending up with a disproportionate share of the supply growth?
So we have not, so what we are saying is that we have not said fresh supply is not coming. I think we have said that there's a certain pattern we are seeing in terms of growth, and eventually I think funding will start, and funding has started, and eventually in the next 3-4 years, the new supply should emerge. You know, new supply takes time. And I think, and bear in mind that management contracts are not signed when the property is fully ready. Management contracts are signed when the owner is kind of trying to start the design process, actually. and we get a share at that stage itself. So if you look at slide 76, where we talk of the number of inventory per year, you will see 3,000 rooms per year is what we have said we will open. And it is because these contracts have been signed today, which will open, say, in 2720. So we are signing at a greenfield before the project probably gets off the ground, actually.
Okay. And secondly, continuing with the Shaleen question, currently when you sign a management contract, you only capture 1/5 or 1/6 of the potential EBITDA. Why not grow aggressive? You have the cash flows, you have the balance sheet in asset creation or acquiring some of these contracts.
We would consider any options that come. We are today, as we said, well positioned. We don't have debt and we have cash reserves to do whatever makes sense. So as you said, if being aggressive makes sense on the domestic front, we will be aggressive. If it makes sense to invest in a few more Ginger properties, we will invest. If it makes sense to have an iconic Taj, we would do so, like we are doing in Lakshadweep. We are building 2 Taj properties in line with the history of the company. We built Goa, we built Kerala, we built Andaman. So we are also building now Lakshadweep will be world-class resorts. These are small, maybe like a total of 150 keys, both of them put together, or 175. But that part will happen, and it takes time to build resorts. It takes 3 to 5 years to get into such remote locations and build the place. But once it is built and ready, then it will be fine. But it is aggressive. If you are not aggressive, you would not go to these places.
Okay.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Saurabh Patwa from Quest Investment Advisors. Please go ahead.
Thanks a lot for taking the question. What's your thoughts on when we get into the renovation and all, what kind of return ratios you target? How do you identify this is the project that will be able to generate a specific kind of ROE or ROC metrics if you ROC metrics if you
like? Sorry, we can't understand you. Your line is not clear.
Saurabh, if you're on a hands-free, request you to use the handset.
Is it better?
Yeah. Maybe speak a little slowly, Saurabh, so that we can hear you clearer.
Is it better?
This is much better, absolutely.
Hello?
Yes, it is better. It is better. We can hear you. So why don't you, we just request you to speak a little slowly so that we can get the word.
Sure. I just wanted to understand your thoughts on when we get into a new CAPEX or a renovation, what kind of return ratios we target?
So I think fundamentally, we look at the normal VAT. I think we look at our normal VAT. Normally in this industry, we take about 11.5% VAT. And as long as the return continues to be above that, we are fine. And on renovations, there is absolutely no problem, because on renovations, what you're doing is an existing property or renovating for better returns. On greenfield, in general, 11.5% back is good, and we make sure that we earn better than that. So there's no problem.
And would you be able to give a breakup of how would we have received for India business and outside India?
Sorry,
we can't hear you.
You'll have to repeat. You'll have to repeat, yeah.
Send it separately, the questions, please.
Yeah.
So just wanted to understand, would you be able to share our ROC for properties in India and properties outside India?
So we have, if you look at our capital market day presentation, if you look at it last May, please look at it on the website. We have clearly given the return on capital employed for domestic assets and the international assets. So you can pick it up from there.
Sure. Thank you.
It's in the appendix, yeah.
Thank you.
Maybe the last couple of questions, please.
Yes, we have the last question in queue. The last question is from the line of Nikhil Agarwal from VT Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Good evening, sir, and thank you for the opportunity. So my question was on the debt side. You've reduced your debt to quite a significant extent in the first half, but your finance costs have not reduced as such. So was it because you paid your debt at the fag end, towards the fag end of the quarter, or is there any other element in that?
No, that's wrong. This is the accounting.
The lease. I think you're getting confused with the interest on lease capitalization. So I think it is nothing else actually. Otherwise, the finance cost is actually negative. It's negative. So Lee, I think when you say finance cost on the P&L, those includes the cost on lease capitalization.
You see, in the IAS accounting standard that changes what goes above and what goes below, but we don't have any debt.
Except
the new company. Okay, got it, sir. And so lastly, you said Q3 would also be a double-digit growth year-on-year, given that last year Q3 was your highest ever quarter. So you're confident of getting that double-digit growth in quarter 3 as well?
See, Q3 is always the best quarter. It was not last year. If we go back in the history, Q3 would always come out to be the best quarter. And as we mentioned before, given the business on the books that we have for the month of November already, because the visibility is short, and the 26 days that we have had of October, there is nothing that makes us believe that we should not have similar kind of growth that we have witnessed last year-on-year basis, if not higher. We even think it could be higher.
All right. Got it, sir. That's it from me. Thank you so much.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you for everyone who joined the call. Thank you for asking the questions that you did. For any other queries, please feel free to reach out to us in our corporate office, our investor relation teams. And we really look forward to talking to all of you at the end of next quarter. And our very best wishes for the upcoming festive season, and hopefully use all our hotels, all our brands and Taj properties, and spend all your monies in our restaurants. Thank you for joining. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. On behalf of the Indian Hotels Company Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, ladies and gentlemen. You may now disconnect your lines.
Thank you.